GoDaddy.com. Use the code BLU139 to get 10% off any combination of purchases at GoDaddy.com. See site for details. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com. Tango Tango Papa 1375, July 15, 2010.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Solon, Ohio. S-O-L-O-N. It's a you've never heard of it before, no doubt, unless you've heard me mention it. It's a suburb of Cleveland, Ohio. Spent the night last night at there at Lebanon, Tennessee. Of course, I spent the prior night at Maumelle, Arkansas, and then got up the next morning. That was yesterday. Drove to Lebanon, and then not too long before I got to Lebanon, they sent a load that was going to pick up at the same place where I was dropping the trailer at, and so I was able to drop that, you know, the loaded trailer in there, pick up the other loaded trailer, the one that was coming to Ohio, and then I parked it. There's this Uncle Pete's truck stop that's been there for many years. I parked there next door, basically to this place where I was at, in this warehouse, cold storage, and went in, got something to eat, came back out to the truck. And I was feeling pretty tired by then. It was about, I guess it was pushing about probably maybe 9 o'clock, 8:30, 9 o'clock. And I was really feeling tired and drowsy, and so I decided I was just going to go straight to bed. And so that's exactly what I did. I ended up waking up, I guess it was about 12:30 a.m. I ended up waking up. And for a while there, I thought, well, I'll just go ahead and get up, and maybe I can record a podcast if I'm awake enough. And then so I turned the light on, and I sat up, and after a couple of minutes, I decided, I'm still tired. I'm going to lay back down, and so I got my one of my iPods, and I started listening to some music, and laid back down, and I don't know, didn't really time how long. I must have listened to the iPod for a good hour, or maybe more, probably more like an hour and a half. And finally, I started feeling drowsy again, so I turned the iPod off and sat it aside, and and then I did go back to sleep, and then it was about, I guess it was around 8 o'clock this morning when I woke up. And so I basically then got up, got around, and headed up here towards Ohio. And now, the load that I brought up here is, was supposed to unload at I think 9 a.m. in the morning Eastern time, but they said, oh, that's a drop and hook. And so they had me drop my trailer in there, and then they said, well, you have to go get the empty trailer at this, we have a drop yard. And they told me where it was, so I came over here. I cannot find a Schaefer trailer, so I called them, and they said, well, we must not have any empty Schaefer trailers. You'll have to wait until the morning. So I'm spending the night right here in this drop yard, and then I'll just go back over there in the morning, and they should have the load unloaded and hopefully have my trailer empty, and then I can be on my way again. So had to spend, it doesn't really matter because I have to spend, you know, I would have hooked on to the empty trailer and no doubt spent the night here anyway. So, oh well, at least I've got a place to spend the night. So nobody's chased me off so far. So, in any case, it wasn't a bad day today. It was, I think, temperature-wise, it was maybe probably mid-80s. You know, I think it, now yesterday it was kind of fairly humid down there in Tennessee, and of course it's cooler up here in in this part of Ohio. I think probably I'm guessing the temperature somewhere in the 70s. So it's, you know, not really all that hot, not as hot as it could be. So it's just kind of a more of a cooler summer. I think we experienced a string of warmer summers there for a while over the past few years, and then the past couple of years it's kind of been cooler. It really has. There's been, you know, you're always going to have some really hot days here and there, but it's been kind of cooler. And well, last week when I was out there in California, I was really surprised at how cool, really cool it was compared to what it could be, out there, especially out there in the desert. So it's just, the weather's kind of shifted, and, it's periodically, if you, you look at temperature graphs, and over a long period of time, of course, human beings haven't been measuring them that long, but you look at temperature, tree rings and what have you, and over a period of time, the temperature goes up and the temperature goes down. It's a sine wave. If you measure it, it's a sine wave. My feelings on this, the global warming thing is just, it's all a hoax designed to give, to get people to pay higher taxes primarily. And, the reason, there are always people that are thinking, oh, it's a big conspiracy, but there are people, there's always people that want to take things over, want to rule the world. People say that all the time. Oh, I'm going to rule the world. I want to rule the world. Well, there's people that really are in a position of doing that, but how can they do it? The only way they can do it is to take advantage of people that are not really themselves, people that don't have a genuine identity, people that are slaves. Earlier today, I posted this little short statement on Facebook that probably has some people scratching their heads. Now, let me think if I may have to look at it to see exactly what I posted. But basically what I posted, if I'm I just posted slaves are, people that are enslaved, slaves are throwaway whores, as in throwaway prostitutes, discardable. And I think I got some people scratching their heads. What does that mean? That doesn't make any sense. Well, let me kind of go through my reasoning. Now, if you someone that's a prostitute is a slave. Whether it's a prostitute, a female prostitute selling sex, she's a slave, because usually they have pimps and so on and so forth. But even if they don't, even if they're just out there on their own selling their body, they're under compulsion to do that. They're slaves, because no one in their right mind would do that. But so they're slaves, and slaves, what are they doing? Selling their body, prostitute selling her body, she's discardable. Someone's paying to use her, so she throw away. So let's say that you expand the definition of a prostitute or a whore to include like a preacher, like a false, phony. One of these false, phony preachers that, is there to make people feel good, kind of suck, an ego-sucking preacher. And that's basically what a whore is. A prostitute is, it's just a paid ego-sucker. Well, so the same thing applies with a preacher that's kind of prostituting himself for the money, putting on the performance for the money. That's what a female prostitute does. Put on the performance. Well, people, you know, they'll use that preacher for, you know, as long as he's good at sucking on their ego, they'll use him. But otherwise, they just throw him away. And that's why, one of the reasons why, you know, you've heard me talk about how churches often just go through preachers like water. You know, if a preacher ends up being at a church for a couple of years, it's a long time. Usually it's just a few, you know, maybe 6 months or 3 months, and they're gone. One of the reasons is that, you know, the people that are preachers or trying to be, they want to be preachers, they can't bring themselves to do what people in the church are demanding them to do. You know, they want them to put on the song and dance and suck on their egos. And depending on the church and, you know, the congregation, some of them are really willing to do that. You know, they're wanting to pay. You know, depending, you know, they'll pay top dollar for a top prostitute, basically. Someone to prostitute themselves. And so those people are discardable. Throw away. But even if, you know, even in the sense of a traditional slave, you know, I'm kind of thinking more enslaved, you know, people that are just psychologically enslaved to whatever. If you're a slave of anything, you're basically, you're being used, whether you like it or not. Doesn't matter. Doesn't even matter if you realize you're a slave or not. You're being used. And therefore, you're discardable. And even if you're a physical slave, you know, even if you go back to the days when slavery was legal in the United States, those slaves were being used and they were throwaways. You know, they were discardable. They really were discardable. So, therefore, all slaves are throwaway whores. You know, that's just kind of putting it in blunt terms. And you might have to scratch your head and think about that a little bit, but that is really, you know, if you really understand what I mean, you can't really argue with it. So, now, of course, there are probably people that would, but there are plenty of people that are either, you know, they just don't understand quite the terms, or they don't want to understand. They're just kind of in denial, and they've got their little, you know, somehow their thinking is clouded one way or the other. You know, as I was laying there kind of listening to that music last night, I was, I was kind of thinking at the same time, and, you know, when we come into this world, you know, we're fairly close to the truth. You know, we're fairly close to our conscience. Even though our minds have yet to develop, human beings have a soul, and that soul is in a little baby form, is fairly close to the truth. It's fairly close to whatever it is that brings us into existence and sustains that existence. In other words, we're fairly close to God, or some sort of, you know, parent spirit, whatever you want to call it. We're fairly close to that, but our minds have yet to develop. And of course, most people, I think, are familiar with the concept of, you know, human beings being born in sin. Or in other words, we're born with this ability to choose. We're born with this ability to spit in the face of God, basically. Spit in the face of our Creator. We're born with the ability to sort of go against our own latent nature. And, you know, we really do have to learn to become human beings. You know, and most of us just end up becoming animals, kind of responding, being externally formed, sort of responding externally to our environment. But for some of us, there's for some reason, some of us are not happy with kind of being enslaved or, you know, to that externally formed, you know, becoming an externally formed creature. We're just not happy with it. And we begin to look for real answers, and nothing but the real answer will do. You know, and that can take, for some people, it's fairly quick, but other people, it can take them a long time. Even if they're actively looking, it can take them a long time. But when, you know, these concepts, it's a simple concept, but it's hard to talk about. Because when we, you know, we come into this world, we're fairly close to the truth, we're fairly close to that, to our Creator. And then something happens, you know, because we have this proclivity to want to play God in our own mind. There's this huge temptation for us to play God in our own mind. And all of us, you know, because we're born in sin, we will do, you know, we're already, you know, because our, you know, if you believe the Adam and Eve story or not, you know, there had to be a first pair of human beings. And the, and those human beings fell. We're descended from them. So therefore, we're you know, we're born in sin. You know, so and we're also we're born with this proclivity to want to play God. You know, and so and usually, the first people that we deal with are our parents, and we tend to look at our parents as gods when we're little kids. Little kids tend to look at their parents as gods. They tend to expect their parents to. Be perfect, and of course, the vast majority of parents are anywhere anything but perfect, and the kids end up resenting the parents for failing them. And even if you have some good parents, you know, the kids will still resent the, you know, can still end up resenting the parents. They still will end up resenting the parents because they want to play God in their own minds. And so I believe we're here to sort of experience that. You know, we're here to experience where that goes. And so it's, you know, this is almost like a halfway house between heaven and hell, in a way, this existence on earth. So the problem is, how do you get back? How do you, you know, if you realize that you got a problem. You know, because I think there's at least three types of people. There are people that you know, kind of, you could say children of the light, that sort of, you know, because they have God's light within them, you know, they're not completely separated from it. It's still there. They can see what's wrong. They can see that things are just, something's wrong with this existence. But they're screwed up. Because they, you know, they're sort of, you know, we end up becoming screwed up, and so you have those people that are kind of caught between a rock and a hard place because they can see what's wrong, and yet they're screwed up themselves. And then you have people that are just perfectly happy with just they seem to be perfectly happy with just being, you know, just conditioned people, and, you know, not have any light in them at all. Don't see anything wrong with the way we exist, and they're just perfectly happy responding to whatever the greatest pressure is. Now, they may mumble and grumble, but, you know, when it comes down to their identity, they're just externally formed creatures, and that's all they are, and most of them are just hopelessly that way, sort of hopelessly brainwashed. And then, of course, the third category of people are the people that want to rule. You know, and those, there are people, and there aren't that many of them, thankfully, but there's enough of them that just want to, you know, they're happy just presiding over, you know, screwing people up, presiding over a decaying population. And there are people that benefit from decadence. There are people that know how to profit out of people's downfall. And they don't have any conscience about it. They're perfectly happy to oblige. They're perfectly happy to try to rip people down and then take advantage of it. So the people that I'm concerned about, the children of the light, if you want to call them that, we can see what's wrong, yet we're wrong ourselves. We're screwed up ourselves. And the question is, how do you get back? How do you become genuine? Because we've got this potential genuine identity, yet we're not genuine. We've resented our parents. We've responded in the wrong way to the world around us, and we kind of become partway worldly. And kind of enslaved to different things of the world that we shouldn't be enslaved to, but we are because we resented. And you can become proud of your sin, proud of your resentment. That's possible too. People often fall into that trap. And so you have people that are, they're kind of caught between a rock and a hard place. Because they can see what's wrong, they can see that something's just terribly wrong, but they don't really know what to do about it. And they're caught up in the problems themselves. And then, of course, if you get angry, people think, oh, getting angry is the solution. I'll just get angry at this and it'll be a solution. And, of course, resentment-type anger just makes you worse. The more you resent, the worse you become. And it becomes a vicious cycle. And the people that don't have any conscience at all, that are ruling over the mess, they can get to the point where, they'll just drive you crazy. They're happy to oblige. They'll drive you nuts. They enjoy driving you crazy. There are parents that are that way. There are bosses that are that way. There are people like that around that sort of enjoy screwing people, kind of screwing people's minds. Getting people to react in the wrong way. But again, the question is, how do you get back? How do you become genuine? On my website, you go to truckertompodcast.com. Up at the top, you'll see a link that says meditation. Click on that. There are three files that I have hosted there, three MP3 files. They came from FHU.com. Give those a try. With the idea of that meditation, it's a very simple meditation. The idea of it is to, kind of get you to practice, kind of getting out of the swirl of your thoughts, because you got this constant swirl of thoughts that goes around and around and around and around and around like a squirrel cage. And that keeps you anchored, that keeps you separated from reality. That keeps you separated from your Creator. And so if you can practice, just sit down and practice, give this meditation a try. It's very simple. And most people, the majority of people that will actually give that an honest try will find that it helps them. And if you find that it helps you, then continue to do it. It's just, there's a statement in the Bible, be still and know that I am God. Okay, well, this is a way of practicing being still. You're not stilling your mind. You're not trying to say, I'm not going to think of anything and blank your mind out, because you can't, and it's a mistake to try. You know, and it's also a mistake to, you know, sit there and, like, some of these things that, you know, they you know, or repeat some silly word, some meaningless sound in your head. That's a mistake as well. You know, it may seem like it's giving you relief, but then it's just an illusion. It's just, you're just lying to yourself. But the idea is, if you can begin to practice sort of being in the moment, then, you know, you kind of begin to, you know, it's as if God begins to reprogram you. You know, and you're because God, that's where God is God is in the moment. God is not in the past. God is not in the future. God is in the moment right now. And that's the only place that God exists. And that's the only place that you can actually kind of begin to be to sort of make contact. You know, and this idea of prayer, you know, people, well, I'm going to, you know, they've got this Amazon.com like wish list where, or it's a let's make a deal. Like if you'll do this, I'll do that. You know, or if, you know, I want the new car and I'll do such and such if you'll give me the new car or whatever that which is patently absurd. Prayer, the idea of prayer, you know, you're not going to change God's mind. God's going to change you. You know, if you want to get a suntan, what do? You go stand in the sun. You can't really look at the sun. Don't want to do that. But if you want to get a suntan, then, or, you know, just, you don't want to overexpose because that can be dangerous too, because it'll burn you up. You know, you end up with skin cancer if you get too much. But just a moderate amount. A small to a moderate amount is good for you because then your skin can produce vitamin D. You know, and that's one of the few ways that that's like the only vitamin that I know of that your body can actually produce. You know, and you know, so you need some exposure to the sun in order to have vitamin D. Well, what you're doing with this meditation, if you practice it properly, is you're practicing being in the moment, and you're being, you know, it's almost as if you're being exposed to an inner sun. You know, that's a good metaphor for that. And, you know, you can't, you know, the way that works, you know, you once you begin to practice some meditation, if you're practicing it properly, you'll find that you keep getting distracted. You know, you have these thoughts that kind of pull you in, and all of a sudden you're in a daydream. And then all you have to do is realize, hey, I'm in a daydream. No need to get upset about it. I'm in a daydream. And then go back to, you know, and back to the meditation. It's very simple. Very simple meditation and process. So you just keep doing that over and over and over again. And you'll find that as you practice it, you can do it, you know, you get better at it. But, you know, and as I say, some people, it might take them a shorter period of time to get better. And then other people, it may take them a longer period of time. You know, it's not an instantaneous process. You know, for most people, it took them a long time to get screwed up. You know, kind of depending, and it can take a while to kind of get unscrewed. Pardon the way I put that. So, but that's the only place in the moment. That's the only place that common sense exists. It doesn't exist in the future, it does not exist in the past, and it does not exist in your intellect. And it does not exist in your emotions. It only exists in the moment. So, you know, and then the other part of that, you know, if you're going to survive what's on the way, you know, in the near future, can't really predict the future other than, you know, there's some nasty things that are just right, seemingly right around the corner. If you're going to survive the future intact, then you'd better have your common sense handy. Because if you don't, you're in big trouble. So, anyway, I've got some audio comments that Scott from Scott Podcast sent me. And so let's go ahead, I haven't listened to any of these, so let me go ahead and play these. I have no idea what he's going to be talking about in these, but he's designated these for the, you know, he marked them with podcast. So let's see what Scott has to say. So here is Scott.
You're talking about cell sites having to upgrade for, you know, one from 3G to 4G and things like that, and how it's not all as easy as you might think. Boy, it isn't, believe me, Tom. And in fact, I saw a special, I think it was on a television show. Either that or it was on the internet, but I think it was on a TV show. And it was about these people that climb up these towers, and that it's an extremely specialized job. That there are these towers that go way up there, and there's quite a few of them. And it takes a very special kind of a person to go up on these towers and do work, you know, replace things, do the various types of work. Many people have died, many people have gotten hurt. It's an extremely specialized form of work. And I'm sure you've heard of the show called The Deadliest Catch, because it's a job that is just extremely deadly. Well, the same is true of this tower stuff. It's a job that is just fraught with the potential to be deadly or, you know, devastating to your health in all kinds of different ways. So you might want to look on YouTube, on Netflix, on wherever, to look into that, because you'd be amazed at what's involved in physically upgrading these towers, because somebody has to get up there. They have to stay out of the way of high-power transmitters that can fry you if you get in the way of the signal, because it's almost like microwave. There's a lot of dangers, not the least of which, obviously, is being way up there and falling. Wind blows, you know, they do it in all different kinds of weather. They're under really tight timetables, and so, you know, it happens to be freezing today with ice. You're going to go up anyway, because they're under some strict timetables. They get big money. These guys get big money. But some of the guys that do it, the show I had was about this gal who maintained a bunch of people who did this. And one of the guys was a drunken fool. You know, he'd go out to parties and get totally rip shit. And, you know, he was a real moron of a guy, but he was gutsy. And when he got up on that tower, he was just real good at what he did, and they kept him around because of that. But in his actual life, he was just a total idiot. And so you find that that happens just because of the type of person you need to do this job. So, yeah, you know, I can't remember what the name of that show was, but it's something you might want to look into, because I think you would find it interesting. Just a thought.
Okay, well, thank you, Scott. While you were talking, I brought up Netflix, and I've typed in lineman. And I'm kind of waiting for it to pop up here, but I'll definitely look into that. I don't know. Now, with electrical repair, you know, it's called a lineman. I'm not sure what the cell repair people would be called, but I'll do some research and see if there's a specialized term for that. But if that's on Netflix, then that should be... I'm assuming if it's a, you know, documentary type or TV show, then there'll probably be something popped, you know, that will pop up. Now, I'm not seeing, Line Watch, Border Patrol officer is forced to leave his position in New Mexico. No, that's some kind of a movie. So I'll have to do some research here. But there should be, if I type the right thing in there, should be able to find that or find something similar to it. And there should be some documentaries that are, but I've seen some TV shows like on the Discovery Channel, you know, kind of not really series, but where they have shown sort of, you know, they were kind of like specialized shows, you know, where they show the guy on the, you know, that, like, that's repairing the high power tension lines, you know, looking for problems, you know, and they work with a helicopter and so on and so forth. And those are very interesting, and obviously those are extremely dangerous jobs. And the same thing would obviously apply with, you know, upgrading a cell tower or doing any kind of repair to a cell tower, because the, you know, those are high power. I think those are fairly high power microwave transmitters, and they will fry you. You don't want to get in front of one if it's running. And then I know someone that's kind of involved in that business, sort of, you know, kind of directly or even, you know, indirectly and then kind of directly. And what he's told me is that to repair a cell, you know, let's say just to upgrade a cell tower, oftentimes the cell tower may be, you know, the single tower may have more than one carrier, cell carrier actually, that has equipment on it. You know, maybe you have one, you know, they have Verizon, or it could be Verizon, AT&T, and Sprint, for example, or some mixture thereof. And so they actually have to, they may have to, you know, they have to do the work on these things in the middle of the night usually. You know, that's when they turn the equipment off. You know, sometimes they'll do the work in the middle of the night when a minimum number of people are, you know, customers are going to be impacted with, you know, when they take, you know, a little, you know, because that's basically a network node. They take a cell site down. Some people are going to end up being affected by it. Well, you know, you want to minimize the impact on the network by doing it in the middle of the night. And that requires all kinds of scheduling. It can require people calling in advance to get permission. Let's say that the cell site's in a city on a building. Then, you know, in a lot of major cities, especially like New York City or Washington, D.C., they've got to have all kinds of permissions, and people have to know that they're coming and so on and so forth. So, there, you know, there's a lot of logistics that's involved with it as well, just besides the physical danger of it. So there's a lot to it. There's a whole lot more to it than we realize. We just want the average cell customer is just kind of, or we're electric customers, just kind of spoiled, and we just expect it to work like clockwork. We want our phones to work. We want our electricity on, and if it goes off just for a minute, you know, the people are calling up the electric company and wanting the thing fixed, and it's just, you know, I think we're really spoiled. Because these things do have, they have, at least up until now, they've worked like clockwork. And that may change in the future, you know, especially if with the insane government that we have at this point, but, you know, with, and the insane population that we have, half, you know, as I was speaking before, I think half of the people, they're about 50%, you know, it's kind of hard to know exactly. But about half of the people in this country are brainwashed. They're just hopelessly brainwashed. And they'll just respond to whatever the greatest pressure is. But, you know, they don't know up from down. They don't know their ass, pardon my French, from hole in the ground. And you can't straighten them out. All you can do is just kind of, you know, give them the pressure, and then they'll just respond to whatever the most pressure is, and that's the way it is. And you can't straighten them out. You can just put the pressure on them, and then they'll respond that way. But forget about trying to argue with them. Just, you got to just lay the law down. This is how it is, and they'll respond. But so anyway, Scott has sent another couple of files here. They're fairly short, so let's just go ahead and go on with these. So here's the second file from Scott.
Okay, Tom, hi. I listened to your podcast here, and you played a clip of this birthday of Obama and Helen Thomas, and then another clip where she talks about the the Jews should get out, you know. And I guess that indicating that, you know, she's anti-Semitic. But in any case, that being the case, you know, she's a reporter, and you were implying that she's biased and how horrible that is. My question to you is, do you honestly believe that there are any unbiased reporters out there that are any less biased than she is? And who are they? You know, I would bet that there's not a single reporter that doesn't have some strong viewpoints in one direction or another. And so if you would agree with that, then what would make her any worse than any other reporter to receive condemnation for her real viewpoints? Because if they all have bias in their real life, so to speak, quote-unquote real life, then is it possible to do your job in an unbiased way? And that's another question I'd ask you. Do you believe you, Thomas Wiles, you know, you've got your biases, and I got mine, we all do.
Okay, let me interrupt. Yes, absolutely, I am biased. I tend to be, I tend to be a conservative, and I'm not making any bones about it, I'm conservative. But I'm not a reporter. Now, if I were a reporter, I would strive to report just the facts. And the problem, you know, the problem with people like Helen Thomas, I mean, you know, if she was going to be, you know, come out and say what she said, she should have done that 20, 30 years ago. You know, she's been around forever. She should have done that right up front and just said, you know, this is what my bias is, and then go from there. And then we would all know it. But instead, she just tried to pretend like, well, she didn't have any bias, or she just kept that from, you know, kept that from the public. And so in the meantime, everybody just, oh, she's so wonderful, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden, Here it comes, and it comes out in a really venomous, nasty form to a rabbi, of all people. And she's proud of it. You know, I played that clip a couple of times. She's proud of it. She's just wanting to be nasty to that guy. So, you know, if she would have come out, you know, all along she should have been saying, this is who I am, this is who I am, and of course, she didn't do that. Why didn't she do that? Because it would have, you know, probably ruined her career if she would have said she was anti-Semitic, or she said, you know, or spoke that way about Israel. It would have been obvious she was anti-Semitic, and she probably wouldn't have been able to advance her career. But, you know, if I was a reporter, I'd be saying, I'm conservative. You know, this is my opinion. I'm conservative. I'm going to try to report the facts. But here is my bias. This is my bias, and, you know, if I have to, you know, as a reporter, if I give my opinion, I'm going to say, I'm conservative, I have a conservative bias, this is my opinion. But these, if I'm going to report the facts, I'm going to say, these are the facts. But the problem is that there is, and it's obvious to me, and it's obvious to plenty of other people, that the vast majority of reporters, especially now, you know, and it's been going on for years and years, the vast majority of reporters are liberals, and they've tried to pretend like they're not. They tried to pretend like they're just in somewhere in the middle, and they're just reporting the facts. Well, the problem is that it's obvious that they're omitting things. They're, you know, in some cases they report wrong things. Dan Rather, remember what happened to Dan Rather? Did manufactured the story about George Bush and the phony documents that were made in Microsoft Word, supposedly of the National Guard, you know, that was all manufactured, and that was a phony story. Dan Rather lost his job over it, basically. Ruined his career. And, you know, because he was reporting lies. And there's plenty of truth that, you know, things that they just don't say. Things that get bit, that they decide to bury because they're wanting to help whoever, you know, their side, their political side. So at the very least, they should be coming out and saying, this is who I am, this is what I believe, but you know, these are the facts, and they don't, but you know, they're twisting the facts. you know, or they don't report all of the facts. And there's plenty of cases where that happens. You know, it's documented to happen over and over again. So, yes, she needs to come. She should have come out, you know, whenever, 30, 40 years ago, however long she was in the White House, you know, as a White House correspondent. She should have been there saying, you know, at least telling us, somebody, you know, this is my bias. You know, but she didn't. You know, she waited until she, you know, here she is with this rabbi, nasty, you know, and she's really nasty. And she, you know, she basically screwed herself, you know, and I think she just got to the point where she thought she could just say anything and probably get away with it. You know, so she, you know, but again, you know, she should have been telling people who she was all along instead of just, you know, trying to hide it. But again, I'm not a reporter. If I was a reporter, I would be telling you these are the facts. Here are the facts. And then if, you know, and then if, as a reporter, if, you know, if someone wants my opinion, then I'm going to say this is my opinion, but I'm not going to try to twist things or not report certain facts just because they don't, you know, because I don't like them or I don't want to. The other thing that reporters tend to do is they're trying to control people's opinions. Report just enough facts so that people will come to their conclusion. So anyway, let's listen to the rest of Scott's comment.
Do you think you could nonetheless do an unbiased, a version, I'm not saying this right, do you think that you could do reporting in an unbiased way and just sort of step outside your own opinions and look at it, or is it impossible? There'd always be some bias there. My opinion on that is that there would always be some of you there, and that's part of being human. We can try as best we can to do an unbiased and you know, fair and balanced job, but it's never going to happen. So I guess my point of view would be that she's no worse or better than any other reporter, and that I think anybody who reports, you couldn't do unbiased reporting if you wanted to, but you can get it down to a point where it's reasonable, good enough. That's what I always talk about, good enough. And I think that you can do. And then the question becomes is, was the job that she did good enough? And that's just basically talking about the kind of job she was doing more than it is talking about her personal bias.
Okay, well, thank you, Scott. So, you know, I think that a reporter, let's say that somebody's, you know, they're reporting a story. You know, the whole point of a reporter, they're on the street corner, you know, wherever the story is, or they get sent to wherever the story is. The idea is they're reporting what's happening. You know, they're reporting the facts. You know, this is what happened, you know, whatever the facts are. But the problem is that, and it's happened over and over and over again, and that's why, by the way, the news, that's one of the, it's not all the internet's fault that the newspapers are losing readership and that TV, broadcast TV is losing viewers and radio is kind of losing listeners. But certainly, you know, people aren't watching the news. You know, the numbers continue to dwindle, even with cable, news outlets. And the problem is that people are just sick of the it's propaganda. It's not, they're not reporting all of the news. So, you know, if they would just report the news, just, you know, because they're, you know, you can, facts are facts. You know, whatever the facts are, you know, just take all of the, you know, this is happening and that's happening. And, you know, and a lot of these stories are written in such a way that, you know, it's just, you know, they fawn over Obama or, you know, or they're hostile to somebody. You know, you can say, you know, because I can write, you know, I can write fairly well. And I'm, you know, I'm pretty good with words. And so I can take a, you know, you can take a headline, for example, and say it, you know, in a few different, in several different ways, and, you know, to kind of completely, you know, to add drama to it, or, you know, twist the, you know, kind of twist the meaning of it around so that it's trying to say something that isn't, or it's trying to deflect opinion or attention away from something. You know, they'll bury things in a story that are really pertinent, or leave things out, you know, in various ways. And with most, you know, a lot of stories, they never get things quite right, or they leave things out. You know, even if it's just a car accident, they have a tendency to leave things out. And, you know, it's that much worse when it becomes political stuff. You know, they just, instead of just saying what happens, they twist things around, and then then they end up kind of putting their opinion. You know, one of the things that newspapers do, you know, they have these phony, they come up with these phony polls, you know, especially in political season. They'll come up with all these phony polls, and then that's a way of putting the editorial page on the front page, because then they can say, oh, well, this poll says such and such, and, you know, and the poll is... got some obvious, if you dig in the polls, oftentimes they've got obvious flaws in them, but they're trying to control people's perceptions. So, but anyway, thank you, Scott. We might as well go ahead and listen to Scott's third comment. This one's about 5 minutes and 49 seconds, so here's Scott once again.
Okay, Tom, I wanted to make a quick comment on podcast. I'm kind of going through your podcast now, starting with the latest and working backwards. And these are made when you were at home here in the beginning of June. And this one you're talking about a bunch of different things, but one of the things you got into was hard drives and how they can just go on you. Out of the clear blue, you know, that click of death thing. But, Tom, it is possible to monitor the health of your hard drive. And I don't know if you're aware of this or not. But, there's a program called SpinWrite. Steve Gibson writes it, and it's a miracle program. It'll do two things. One, it'll tell you how healthy your drive is by telling you how many points are damaged, how many sectors and tracks and things. Because what hard drives do as a part of their normal job, I don't know if you know this, but this was one of the things they kept saying about, you know, you're never going to get a 300 gigabyte drive, and you're never going to get a terabyte drive. And the reason is that keeping track of all of these little parts of the hard drive that can and do go bad all the time, and you don't even know about it because there's programs running, running on your hard drive in its own internal software. The controller is what's doing this. This programming, if a sector becomes bad or looking the least bit bad, it will take the data in there and then it'll move it over to another sector. And then it'll mark that other sector as bad and won't use it anymore. And this is going on all the time. Things go bad. There's also encoding schemes, much like a CD or a DVD. There's an interleave and an encoding scheme where there's error correction. So even if you can't read some of the data, it can be recovered by the fact that this error correction routine will recover it. So if the drive sees that it's getting this error, it can't get all the data, it'll get it via the error correction routine and then write it somewhere else and mark that bad. And so even when you buy a brand new hard drive, there's a crap load of that drive that is bad. You might not think so, but on a terabyte or a two or 2.5 or whatever, these huge drives, it's unimaginable how much bad stuff there is when they're brand new. And what happens as you go along is that more and more of these sectors start becoming bad because it's becoming worn. And you find that each day the number of sectors that go bad is increasing and increasing and increasing. But the hardware in it continues doing its thing and finding them, moving the stuff elsewhere. And when you get a hard failure is when, let's say, a whole large strip of the information goes bad and it can't correct, or if it's in a vital place and it can't read that, you know, let's say the boot sector of the drive, and it can't read that anymore, and it didn't get a chance to move the stuff around, and then you get that click, click, click. That's the drive trying over and over and over again to reread something using this built-in error correcting and resolving software that's built into the controller, either the SATA.
Let me interrupt. Now, there is the hard drive. One time I had this Dell laptop that had this hard drive that all of a sudden, it was just sitting there running. It was idling, you know, and the screensaver was running. And all of a sudden, the thing, you know, I came back to it, and it locked up, you know. And so I tried, you know, I had to hard power it off, and I tried to restart it, and then you get this message, boot drive not found, or operating system not found. And the thing was, you know, it wasn't just a click, it was, you know, more like a tap. And it was the drive arm was actually hitting the side of the, you know, inside the drive, you know, inside the, you know, there's a, like a, inside of the case, you know, the actual arm was hitting the inside of the case. So the arm itself, the arm itself went bad. And so that's, but I know that they can happen, you know, it can be a more gradual thing where the drives, you know, it can slow down. So, but they will fail, you know. And I know you can, you know, you're talking about monitoring software, the SpinRite by Steve Gibson. And yes, I'm aware of that, you know, but, you know, the idea is, you know, hard drives are cheap today. You know, we got all these massive, big hard drives. All you got to do is just back up. You know, what could be simpler than backing up? So anyway, let's go ahead and listen to some more of Scott's comment.
Data controller or the IDE controller. The controller itself has that built in. Okay, this is where Steve Gibson comes in. He is a nuts and bolts kind of guy. He does that security podcast. He got into the actual workings of this controller, the commands that it responds to and so forth, and he wrote a program that tells it to go out there looking for sectors that are going bad, for ones that are already bad, giving a count so you can literally get the health of your hard drive, and you can keep track of the health of your hard drive as it becomes progressively less healthy. You think that a hard drive just goes bad, boom, overnight. No, that's just when it was the last straw that broke the camel's back. That's all you know from your perspective. But if you run this program of Steve's, you'll be able to literally watch your hard drive deteriorate if you run it often enough, because it gives you that information. SpinRite, program I highly recommend. It runs in DOS. I don't know how it runs with these newer drives. I don't know. It may still run fine with these 1 terabyte drives. You'll have to look on his website to get full details, but I know he's still selling it. And, oh, also I should tell you, if a hard drive goes into that mode where it's going clickety-clackety-clickety, I've had them like this from clients, this SpinRite program isn't just about monitoring the health of your drive. It's about repairing it. And what it'll do is it will try over and over and over. You got nothing to lose if the drive's bad, right? So, you know, there's been times when somebody's drive is fairly fried and a lot of files lost. And I'll go in, I've used SpinRite, and I'll run the thing. And it'll take a couple of days to run on these older drives. I'm talking 50 gigabyte drives or less. Not that big a drive. And it would take, I don't know how long it would take to run now, but it took a couple of days to run. Retrying, doing what it did, but ultimately when it finally completed, the drive ran again. And I've had this happen not just once. I've had it run a number of times and fix drives. And so I became a believer. So this is just something I've learned along the lines of my consulting and I've used in my consulting. And I wanted to point that out to you. Highly recommend it. Steve Gibson, and the program is SpinRite.
Okay, well, thank you, Scott. You know, and yeah, there I know there are people that don't back their drives up, even though they don't back their computers up, and even though they're told, people are preaching at them all the time, they need to back up, and then of course they, you know, there's a lot of people that don't, and then they get caught with their pants down, basically. And of course, you know, if you want to spend some money, you know, there are some people, you know, the data, they have to try to get it back. And so there are companies that specialize in hard drive recovery. Just type that into, You know, you can try a program like SpinRite yourself, like Scott was saying, and you might get somewhere with it. But if you can't and you just have to have the data back, or, you know, at all costs, try to get it back, then you can spend thousands of dollars with one of these hard drive recovery companies. Just type that into Google, hard drive recovery. There are professional companies that you send the thing to, and they can try, you know, let's say drives that have been through fires, or, you know, and they're damaged through a fire or damaged in different ways. They can actually try to, you know, retrieve as much data as they possibly can. It's going to cost you big bucks, but it can, you know, chances are, you know, they have a, you know, they can certainly try, and they do. I think, you know, from what I've heard, these people being interviewed, these hard drive recovery specialists, they do a pretty good job of recovering data, but it's going to cost you. So just back up. The average person is not going to, you know, is not going to, you know, the data isn't that critical, but, you know, you're spending hundreds and hundreds and thousands of hours, you know, working on your computer. You know, as cheap as drives are, you can buy a 1 terabyte drive for $100, you know, external drive at, you know, Walmart or Best Buy or wherever. There's no excuse for not having, you know, at least making periodic backups. There really isn't any excuse. And, you know, if you use computers long enough, you will experience data loss, because that's happened to me more than once. You know, that one time with that Dell laptop, that actually, you know, I had a backup, but it was like a couple, 3 weeks old. And so I didn't lose a whole lot of data. I think, you know, one other time the thing something went wrong, and I ended up losing maybe a few pictures. Haven't really lost a whole lot of data, but the thing with a computer, you can spend hours and hours and hours typing things in and what have you, and everything can be gone in just a split second. You know, whatever it is goes wrong. So, you know, as cheap as the drives are today, there really is no excuse to not, you know, have an external drive and just back up. You know, it's very easy. And, you know, hard drives do go bad. They're pretty reliable, but they, as Scott was describing, they do go bad. More importantly, people think, oh, I'm backing up to a CD or a DVD. Well, those things go bad too, and you don't even have to do anything. You know, you just have these writable discs, and they can go bad over a period of time. You're just sitting there on a shelf in a climate-controlled house or office. They, you know, things are, there's still some sort of chemical reaction that goes on, and those things can and do go bad. And I have seen that a number of times. So, you know, CDs and DVDs are not a good long-term backup strategy or solution. They really aren't. So, you know, backing up to, you know, more, you know, hard drives, great idea. Multiple hard drives, even better. So, anyhow, probably better be cutting this off, see if I can get this uploaded and published and then get to bed. As I say, I did kind of catch up on my sleep last night, so I'm, you know, the past few nights before that, I was kind of cutting things a little bit short. So, you know, it was about time for me to catch up. So I think I'm caught up at this point. So, but in any case, hope everyone is having a great week so far, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.